Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council, candidates, and citizens that may be listening. So just to kind of give a brief background of what we're looking at here is, back in March, Congress approved the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA for short, providing funds for the coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds, of which we are set to get a distribution and have received one already this year, and then we'll receive the second half of it next July. So what we want to talk about is the eligible uses of that funding and the ineligible, and then do a little bit of a background on what we used CARES Act funding last year, and then we can give a brief overview of what other entities in Clark County are considering as well. So I'm going to kind of read. Julie, were you going to put the presentation?
And council, your meals are in front of you. Please do feel free and dig in while Kirk is talking. He won't feel offended at all.
Depends on if you eat the cookie or not.
Yeah, if you eat the cookie, he doesn't give you the extra money. That's how that works.
Okay, thanks, Julie. So if we go to slide two, I'm going to go ahead and read what the funding objectives as defined by the United States Department of the Treasury. What the funding was intended for was to support urgent COVID-19 response efforts to continue to decrease the spread of the virus and also to bring the pandemic under control. Replace lost revenue for eligible state, local, territorial, and tribal governments to strengthen support for vital public services. And we'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute. And support immediate economic stabilization for households and businesses. And address systemic public health and economic challenges that have contributed to the unequal impact of the pandemic. So one thing about the fiscal recovery funds is it does provide a lot more flexibility than the CARES Act did. So we do have the ability to use it for quite a bit more than what we would have been able to use the CARES Act funds for. So if we go to the next slide, our distributions, what we qualify for based on the formula that was determined by the Treasury Department. A lot of that's based, I believe it was, it was either FEMA or distributions through there. But our disbursement in total will be $2,555,041. We've already received our first disbursement, just about $1.3 million earlier this year. And we should receive the second disbursement sometime end of June, early July of next year. Now, one thing that happens with the funds is we can use them for a longer term as well compared to the CARES Act. We had a very truncated period of time to use those funds. We actually have until December 31st of 2024 to obligate the funds. And then we have to spend the funds by December 31st of 26. What that means is we would have to obligate. So if we were going to do something that it's a multi-year project, we would have had to enter the contract prior to December 31st of 2024 for those funds. And then we have until 2026 to complete the spending. If we don't obligate or enter a contract by that time, we would have to return the funding. We also are required to file an annual report every October from the time beginning this year until the time that we actually complete using the funding. So on the next slide, the eligible use of the funding, first, supporting the public health response, could be services, programs to contain and mitigate the spread of COVID-19, services to address behavioral health care, the needs that are exacerbated by the pandemic, payroll and covered benefit expenses for public health, health care, and public safety employees. Number two, it can address the negative economic impacts caused by the public health emergency. We could deliver assistance to workers and families, support small businesses, speed the recovery of tourism, travel, and hospitality sectors in our area, and rebuild public sector capacity. Serving the hardest hit communities and families, addressing health disparities and social determinants of health, investments in housing and neighborhoods, addressing educational disparities and promoting healthy childhood environments. We can replace lost public sector revenue. Now, what that means is in comparison to our last year prior to COVID, which is 2019, we would compare all eligible revenue sources in 2020 to 2019, and that would determine if we had a loss of revenue and whether we can replace, and then also each year up through 2024, we can compare to the prior year. And I just want to say right now, 2020 was a pretty good year with development. We don't qualify for replacing any revenue.
Can I ask a quick question before you
sure.
move on? So a lot of these eligible uses seem to indicate some sort of negative impact that has to be on the book somewhere. Is that correct or no?
Well, yes. And with the flexibility, council can determine what is a negative impact. Is it something where businesses lost revenue, or you know, they had trouble surviving, they barely made it through? Could it be utility assistance? We'll kind of go through some of that stuff here in a little bit, but it also means we could use some of the funding for things, and I was just going to cover that here in a minute, like infrastructure, where we can prepare to make sure that Ridgefield's ready to take the next step.
Okay.
The recommendations that are coming down from most economists and, you know, things like the Government Finance Officers Association, City Managers Council, things like that, National League of Cities, is to try to be as strategic as possible with the use of the funds. Let me finish this, and then I kind of want to backtrack a little bit about what we want to look at as well. Providing premium pay for essential workers is also an eligible use. And then, like I mentioned, infrastructure, investing in water, sewer, stormwater, and broadband infrastructure. So I mentioned the strategic outlook on this, and I'll talk about that a little bit with what some other entities are doing. In our budget policies, we're looking at whether the revenue source is one-time or whether it's ongoing. So our budget policies say if it's a one-time revenue source, which this is, we should not be using those funds to create new services that have an ongoing expense unless we can also create a new revenue source that will support that. So we are looking at, you know, using this really for one-time expense. So what we're looking for tonight is to kind of go over what was eligible, what's ineligible, what we've done before, and then have a discussion about that between council, and if there's questions of staff that we can answer. What we'd like to get at the end of the study session is really a high-level policy direction of where council wants to go. We're not asking for action in here, but we're asking for that policy direction. What do you want us to do? If there's a determination of how you'd like to spend it, and some of it could be spent this year, then we will have to come back to you at a later date with a spending plan through a budget amendment so that you can look at that and then adopt that so that we can move forward. Does that make sense? And is there any questions? on that?
I don't have any questions on that particular thing, but do we have anything that supports the public health response that we are we obligated to, like, the county health department or payments to them for COVID shots and all of that?
No, we are not. And I was going to kind of cover a little bit about what they're doing.
Okay.
So that might answer that question in a little bit more detail here in just a moment.
And I guess the same thing goes for the next two bullet points on that. So I'll just wait till you get done.
Okay. And if there's any questions at any time, feel free to ask. We don't have to wait till the end. So ineligible use of funding, there's really only a couple things that are considered ineligible with this act being adopted. We cannot use the funding to directly or indirectly offset a reduction in net tax revenue. So let me kind of explain that, because that's been a confusing one, that there's been an awful lot of questions from staff back to Treasury to try to define that. What that means is, if we were to, say, for property tax, and I'm just going to use that as an example, if we were to go back and decide, hey, we want to lower property taxes and use this money to supplement the revenue that we would have gotten from the property taxes, that's ineligible. If there was something like, say, in our model, it says we're not going to raise water rates, and we use this on water infrastructure, that's still eligible, because the model is what's driving saying we're going to maintain the rates the same as what they are. You know, because normally in our model, we have a CPI basically that we increase. So we can't just go and blanket drop taxes, drop utility taxes, or something of general nature and use this money to replace that. So the other one that we can't do is, we cannot use the funding to deposit into a pension fund. If we had a net amount owing in a pension fund, good thing with Washington, most of our pensions for the city would either be LEF or they would be PERS, and they're pretty well funded. There's no need for anything, so that wouldn't even be a consideration on our part to be depositing into the pension fund. We don't have, you know, a large amount that we owe by any means to bring that whole. So that's the ineligible uses. So there's really not a lot. You guys got a lot of flexibility of what to decide. So what we've done in the past, and I kind of highlighted three of the previous bullets that were eligible uses, and that's, thank you, Julie, for moving that on. So through the CARES Act, we supported the public health response. The way that we did that for our citizens, we purchased and distributed face masks through local businesses. We reimbursed city expenses for safety-related supplies and PPE. So by maintaining the health of our employees, we also helped maintain the health of the citizens, because we have people that were able to continue offering the same services and did not have to cut services as a result. We reimbursed expense for short-term facility changes to promote CDC guidelines and social distancing. We moved employees both to a remote workforce and also an in-person workforce. And then we also, for Public Works as the example, we had people working out of multiple locations, rented, whether it's porta potties or hand washing stations or things like that, so that we would make sure that people could socially distance and then again continue to provide services. We upgraded HVAC systems at City Hall and public safety to promote healthy airflow. That's something that will protect staff and citizens in the future that are visiting our facilities. And then we've purchased air purifiers for all city facilities, again for healthy airflow. Now, we also address the negative economic impacts caused by the public health emergency. We provided economic sustainability grants to small businesses. We provided grants to nonprofits serving the Ridgefield community. We provided utility rebates when we promoted the Shop Local and Save program, which not only helped our citizens with reducing a little bit on their utility bills, but it also promoted people to continue shopping and keep those businesses afloat. We provided utility assistance for local families. The final one, it's providing premium pay for essential workers, so I'm kind of going out on a tangent here. We really didn't provide premium pay as far as we didn't give, you know, hazard pay or anything like that. What we did is we retained 100% of the staff throughout the pandemic. Unlike other agencies around the country, we did not lay anyone off. We did not require them to take unpaid days off or things like that. We maintained and we maintained our services. So those are the things that we have done. So I'm just going to kind of touch on a little bit of what others are considering. And
just a question on what you just talked about. Those have all been paid for.
Correct.
There is no residue payment or anything like that left.
No.
Okay, thank you.
No. Can I ask a quick question? You mentioned one of the things we spent money on was upgrading the facilities for our employees at City Hall.
Correct.
And it sounds like we're kind of on a timeline around September to open up completely to the public. Have all those upgrades been done at this point? Are there additional upgrades that we feel like we might need to do to keep our staff healthy and safe?
We feel like pretty much everything was done. We've got, you know, we've got face shields and things like that in there, both for staff and for the public to visit. We have done the HVAC system. Unfortunately, yesterday we found out that our heater went out, so we are going to have to replace that. Well, that's what we thought. So we're pleased that this time we actually got a break on it. But yeah. And then the other thing, we are moving to the new operations center in the fall as well. And the HVAC system there is extremely old. It we just did some repairs to keep it going for the tenant in the meantime. We will need to replace that, and that's going to be a pretty significant cost as well. Somewhere in the $30,000 to $40,000 range.
Is that something that would qualify for this?
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you,
Kurt. I have a question. Can providing premium pay for essential workers, could that be used for overtime if we had to have workers do something that late at night or in the morning, early because of COVID or because of?
If it's directly related to COVID and we chose to do that, yes, there would be some union implications there. So that is something we probably would need to talk with them if we're going to, and Steve probably can add a little detail maybe, but if we were going to do that for one set of staff, we need to make sure we're rolling that out as an available piece to everyone and look at seniority. So
and if you think about a scenario where we have, and we did have this scenario early in the pandemic where we had employees of community development that ended up both contracting COVID and also being quarantined because they had been exposed to COVID-19. If we had a circumstance like that where we ended up having to pay overtime to other employees to be able to cover the shifts of those who were out, those would be eligible expenses, as well as any contracting time that we might need to pay for to make sure that our essential services are covered.
One last question. Is that previous money all used up?
Yes, we had to submit for all costs with the CARES Act last November, and so that has all been used up. We received, I believe it was $400,275, and we did use all of that.
We wanted to make sure we used just about every dime and didn't give it back. So,
Well done.
So just kind of an overview of what the other entities in the county are doing. All of them are still talking. None of them have made a final decision, but they do have ideas of what they're planning on doing. There's a couple that have, mainly the county, that has already earmarked money for certain things. And the reason the county has done it, obviously, is because this will answer your question, Councillor. They have to offer the regional services, public health, you know, all of the different things that go into offering the you know, the different drive-through vaccine stations and things that the state wasn't paying for. That was something that they would cover. So they do the regional services. We don't have to pay them back for the regional service that benefits us. They're doing that for all of the population in the county.
And it's a per capita amount, right?
Correct.
So it's a per capita amount. So the county, if you think about the county as a whole and what their share of that is, they got a significantly larger amount of money. So did the city of Vancouver and others as well.
Oh, do they have it? Okay.
I have a kind of a side note question. Do you know if the school district received similar funding to help offset some of their costs for the upcoming school year?
Schools did receive some funding for specific purposes that they will do to help them reopen and to be able to promote, you know, whatever healthy choices they need to make so that kids can get in there, whether they have to distance, whatever the CDC guidelines and the state will tell them that they need to do.
And have you heard any swirling around now that there's a new variant out there? Are cities and counties thinking of kind of playing the wait and see game to see if what happens in the fall? Are they getting ready to spend the money right away?
Able to give you a little bit of that. As far as the variant, I can't answer that because I don't know. But I do know what they're all talking about. So the county obviously is looking for impacts for regional services. That's homeless, affordable housing, things that that's also an impact that was exacerbated by COVID. So they can spend money on that. So they're looking at that. They're looking at, obviously, Clark County Public Health is receiving a pretty healthy amount. They're doing information technology upgrades as well. One thing that they're looking at is trying to get more self-service abilities, and a lot of different entities are looking at that. Staffing for indigent defense and the backlog of court cases, because the courts were shut down for quite some time, and then there's all the new laws that came in place. So they're looking at that. Lost revenue, they did have lost revenue that qualifies. And they're looking at grant programs for nonprofits, and then they're looking at temporary staffing needs, courts, corrections, community development, code administration. And one thing I do want to point out, this is all one-time costs that they're looking at here. It's one-time money that they're putting into those programs, so it's not creating new ongoing services. They're just supplementing to get the backlog out.
You mentioned the grants?
Yes.
So in a case of, let's say, Vancouver, I'm assuming since they get quite a bit more money, they would extend out grants that would be a one-time use only? How they would be?
The nonprofit can decide how they want to do it as long as it meets the criteria of what the grant program is.
Okay.
If you look at the CARES Act funding, City of Vancouver and Clark County both looked at some rental assistance programs, and they actually worked through nonprofits so that they provided the money to the nonprofit. The nonprofit then did the paperwork and actually distributed the funding, mainly because they have the structure to be able to accomplish that.
Sure.
Where we as local governments don't have the kinds of structure in place to be able to actually take all the paperwork in that the federal government would require.
Okay. So, Kurt,
I've
got a question. Have you heard anything about cost increase in the court costs in Battleground?
I have not yet. Typically, they get that to me sometime it's end of July, into August. So I'm sure that they're still working through that. And typically, before I come to you guys at the end of August when we talk operating budget, I'll have it by then.
Okay, and it wasn't. The reason for that question is I did hear a little bit of chatter, I guess, that with the COVID, the court costs, they're having to separate the people apart, so there was a lot more cost on Battleground that way. So that would, part of this money could be offset part of the court costs?
Potentially it could.
They also did shut down for a period of time where they were not actually taking a lot of cases during a period of time during COVID as well. So I think we'll get you information on that when we have it from Battleground.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, and just final piece is we don't get charged based on what happened the previous year.
That's true.
It's over a three-year rolling period, and they look at the averages. So this is something that would really kind of smooth out the cost that they would charge us.
Okay.
So Clark County considerations that they're looking at for remaining is they're doing a study for space planning and building reconfiguration to make sure that they have proper social distancing, and they're looking at remote work opportunities and funding the ability to work from home. Modifications to the jail, as we've all read in the paper, there have been some issues there with needing to get inmates spread out a little bit more. And additional courtrooms and new judges to handle the impacts. For Vancouver, They've just begun the process. They just presented to council here in the last couple of weeks. And what they're looking at doing is coming back to try to get some policy decisions by the end of the year. And what they're looking at is really following their macro policy framework that their council implemented with this year's budget. Well, really with the 2020-2021 budget. What that is climate action, equity and social justice, and community safety. And then they're ensuring that there's a pandemic recovery or resilience nexus for how the funds are spent. So we really don't know a lot, although I have heard that, you know, infrastructure for everyone is a big discussion. So for Battleground, again, they're still in the discussion phase, and they're going to wait to obligate any funds until after they get their second amount of money in July of next year. And what they're looking at, they want to look at spending it strategically, and right now they're leaning towards using only on infrastructure. And they do have a lot of costs coming up with mainly their sewer infrastructure, as everybody who's on the DCWA board knows or has been involved there. Camas, they're expecting to do public engagement before they make any decisions, so they'll be doing some outreach here this fall. What they're considering is utility assistance, small business assistance, HVAC replacements in their public buildings. They're also looking at replacing their ERP system, their software that runs all their programs, so that they can upgrade self-service options, technology enhancements in their ambulance service, and then looking, and this is a creative one, deferred park and street maintenance because they did not do it during COVID. Le Center, they're in the process of even defining their plans and committees, and they have not considered any options at this point. Washougal, they're also in the discussion phase. They have been, there has been some areas identified that they will do, and that's facility improvements, electronic plan review, park facility improvements, conference room improvements related to public access. They're going to put in a new customer service counter, upgrades at their plan center, and mail and plan drop box so that they can facilitate people dropping off, similar to kind of what we're doing with the rack right now, where people come and drop off outside and they don't have to enter the building. Considerations for remaining funding are utility assistance, small business assistance, and they are wanting to spend the majority of what they receive on water and sewer infrastructure. And their idea is that they, by doing that, it relieves a lot of the pressure on rate increases for the portion of the rates that go to either new or replacement of either water or sewer stormwater infrastructure. For us, I had already mentioned a lot of what we've done. So the things that we can do, and we have gotten a request for utility assistance also from Clark Regional, they are not eligible for ARPA funds at all. And so they've reached out.
Could I ask a question about what you previously said? For my question was, does the city of Ridgefield, did we have to defer any work due to COVID? Was there some stuff that we had to put on the back burner and that maybe we need to look at? And how much, you know, value or money would that cost to take care of that?
I would need to do a little bit of research with my staff. I can't think of a lot of work that was deferred off the top of my head sitting here, but I could certainly talk to my managers and see if there's any other work that they can think of that I'm not thinking of right now.
What about the Hillhurst project that we didn't get the funds for last year?
It's starting yesterday.
Well, I know, but I mean, it was supposed to happen last year, right? But
we, it was. Right. But I don't know that that would be eligible, for that.
Yeah, we did not budget any additional money that we didn't already budget last year.
Is there any... go ahead. Is there any monies... do we have to look at anticipation at all? If this variant goes a little bit wilder than it is, do we have to look at, okay, we may have to morph back into something that's going to cost money to do that. So do we anticipate the need, that need?
So as far as the anticipating the need, it's tough, again, like Mr. Johnson was saying, it's tough to actually anticipate what the needs will be. With regards to the PPEs necessary to be able to assure that we have a safe workforce and can continue our essential services, we already have those in place. So there aren't additional expenses that we would anticipate for if there is a recurrence, if there is a new wave based on the Delta variant or any other, and we needed to go back to more virtual, more remote work, more distance, all of those things, we already have those pieces in place. It's just a matter of backing into those and not continuing forward. With regards to what that means for the community, for example, masking. If you look at, a fair amount of money from the CARES Act funding was spent on our masking program and all the Ridgefield masks that we worked with our small businesses to be able to get out there. That may be something that you say, well, if we have Delta variant and we need to be redoubling our efforts in that area, that might be something that you would want to put funds toward. The good news is there's 2 years worth of funding that we're speaking to right now. We have the first year's funding that Mr. Johnson already spoke to, and then the exact same amount next year. And then we have 4 years total to spend it. So that we do have, beyond what we already have in the house, we have a whole, exactly that amount that's gonna come in again next year. So with regards to kind of anticipating, it's tough to do on that, but I think what most jurisdictions are doing is not spending all of, even the first year's funds, not spending all of it right now. Either putting it aside for infrastructure and rolling it into the next year, or just holding off on some of the spending to see what happens with the variants and whether there is an uptick. So to your question, there is nothing specific that we're bringing to you today that would address your question, but the funding is flexible enough to be able to accommodate the request, and we have enough of it that if we don't spend all of it that we already have in the house, and you'll see that, then we will certainly have the flexibility to do so.
So in a year's time, you can kind of reboot?
Yes.
For the next?
You'll have another round of funding to be able to do the same things. It's the same, unless they change the criteria for the second round, but nothing we've heard has said that they're going to.
Yeah, to kind of add on to that, we don't have a requirement to spend everything this year. No. We just have to obligate it by 2024. So if we chose to hold on and wait, again, the recommendations coming down from many, like National League of Cities, city managers, GFOA, places like that, is to spend it more strategically with the eye towards, okay, if there is areas that have been harmed, to help them recover, or to spend it on things that will help the city generate revenues. So that's why a lot of places are thinking about infrastructure, because if they get the infrastructure in the ground, there might be more, commercial, retail, something, things like that may come in that help generate revenue that help you in the future with funding that you don't currently have. And that's more ongoing, so that helps build, are there more services you can offer? A lot of different thoughts there.
When you were talking about generating infrastructure, is a road considered infrastructure? And what I was getting at, in an industrial area, to turn around and have latecomer fees to pay for it, but it would generate the potential clients of moving in.
The way the eligibility was written was water and sewer, which includes stormwater and broadband. So okay. it did not specify streets.
Okay.
However, those are key components to road development, right? So if you're talking about water and sewer lines extensions or stormwater work associated with a road project, that component part of a road project could be eligible.
Okay, thank you.
Well, what about sanitary sewer? You mentioned storm sewer, but...
Yes,
sanitary sewer. Of course, that's through Clark Regional, so we're not necessarily paying for the sanitary sewer. That is something they would be doing. They are not getting funding.
Yeah.
They're not eligible to receive it.
How come they can't get funding?
That was not an entity that was defined in the way that the legislation was written.
It was primarily general purpose government. Schools,
right.
School districts were called out separately for a separate piece of funding, but it was primarily general purpose governments. So we do have a request in, and Mr. Johnson will talk about it, is that, you know, if we're talking about utility assistance, for example, the sewer district has, obviously, has Ridgefield residents who are their customers. And they've seen a significant uptick in arrears in those who are behind and paying their bill. And they have asked us to bring that to you for consideration for some of these ARPA funds as well, if we were going to do utility assistance, assistance that we would bring that along with water and stormwater.
So what I'm hearing is it would help the resident and the sewer district, that it would help both.
Correct.
Okay.
So what the request is, and they've gone to all of their partner agencies and said, hey, you know, we're not receiving any assistance. We do have quite a few delinquent accounts for your residents. If you are considering helping your residents on your own city-owned utilities, would you also consider helping out the, you know, the customers that they have that are our residents? And so that's where we've had discussions with them. And so I've asked them for a little bit of detail on what they have. Total Ridgefield customers delinquency is about $77,000. What they've really seen in total increases is about $35,000. To compare that for our water and stormwater utility customers, we're about 31,500 in delinquencies. Typically about this time in the cycle, we would be around 3,000 to 4,000. So that's a pretty significant. So if council was looking at that, the policy decision could be a couple different things. And there's also utility assistance that has been defined in the legislation that flows through the states and then to either a nonprofit or an agency to handle in the different regions. Clark Public Utilities will handle a lot of the utility assistance here, so I wanted to make sure that you're aware of that. I've talked to them. They do not have any of the details yet on what's eligible, what's not. What they're expecting is that it will only be for low income, and you will have to prove that you fit within, you know, certain poverty designation levels and or that you've been, you know, harmed by COVID by showing that you were either unemployed, you lost revenue. So there's a lot of hurdles to jump. We used that kind of designation when we did utility assistance last year. Out of all of the accounts, over 100, we had 6 people actually apply because of all the hurdles. So it really, you know, it helped the 6 people, but it really didn't work. The other policy decision, and that's where the flexibility of the ARPA funds comes in, is that there can be an overall policy decision that everybody has been harmed by COVID. And with that, then we could make a designation of, okay, so if everybody's harmed, this would not only help our residents so that we could do utility assistance for them for the past dues during the COVID period, both for us and for the district, if that's what council chose. But that reduces the amount of work staff has to do and what the citizens have to put in. And then there's a health benefit to that as well, because we will be getting back into the point where shutoffs will occur. The moratorium ends September 30th. What we as staff are hoping is we can kind of partner an assistance program along with when the moratorium ends. We really don't want to go into shutoff with, you know, 100 people significantly past due. We would ask for a policy decision to not shut them off, or a policy decision to help them. And there is some changes in law where we can go back and collect the full amount, but under normal legislation, we could only go back 2 cycles and we would have to write off the rest of it. So they are asking us, obviously, and we do it, help with payment plans. During the last year and a half, not a lot of people have reached out to do the payment plans because there's a moratorium. They don't really have to worry about it right now. But there's a lot of people that were harmed. There's a public health benefit to that, so that does qualify.
And again, we would bring the specifics of any program, assistance program, back to council for your approval, as it would have budget implications. So what we're looking for is that larger policy direction of what to bring to you. And the first one is the one that Mr. Johnson indicated, and it's an important one, which is, from a council's perspective, are we going to treat businesses and individuals as all being impacted of Ridgefield, businesses and individuals in Ridgefield all being impacted by COVID, which is a policy determination which you may make, and that sends us in a direction with regards to assistance programs, or are we targeting assistance only to those who can show that they were tangibly harmed by COVID? And that's something that we really are looking, like right now, for some guidance on, so that when we bring something back, it's targeted to what you want to see.
I was surprised at the six. That just shocks me that six people responded. But is the process too wieldy? I mean, unwieldy?
Well, we had to go with the guidelines that are out there.
Yeah.
So we did have to verify that they were harmed by COVID. What we did to try to make it a little bit easier is we also used our existing programs for low income, and we tried to tie it to that so that it was a little bit. We do get people who apply for that annually, but we wanted to try to get as many people that were harmed and were delinquent to take advantage of that. We just didn't get a lot because part of it was hard to get the documentation. Maybe they didn't have it quite available, but there was a kind of a personal piece to it of not really wanting to show what had happened.
And to our staff's credit, they built a program that was absolutely less onerous than any other program that we saw. We looked at other programs from other jurisdictions around Clark County and looked at what they were doing and requiring for people. And with Kirk's guidance, our utility billing staff worked on a program that was as low as we could get and still meet the legal thresholds. And then not only did they actually lower the bar for the documentation required, they reached out over and over and over again by phone, by email, over and over again, trying to get a hold of people, just letting them know, look, just talk to us. We want to help you. But I'm from the government. I'm here to help is not a great message. And as Mr. Johnson indicated, they didn't have to because you can't shut them off. So, you know, shut-off day in Ridgefield is always a busy day because people pay their bills on shut-off day because they're like, I don't want my water turned off. So that isn't a threat. So when you have people that are trying to decide between paying bills A, B, C, and D, they're going to look at the water bill and not getting shut off. They're going to say, all right, I'm going to put that to the side. I'm going to pay something else.
Okay, question then. If you have to write off X amount and it's an X amount of dollars, are those dollars covered by COVID or no?
No, they would not be.
Okay.
Kirk, I have a question about the our people that are our citizens that are behind on their water bill, $31,000. How many did you say? 100 people or 100 houses?
It was over 100 accounts.
Okay. Well, after hearing what you've been talking about, and I kind of looked through it beforehand, I personally, number two, addressing the negative impacts caused by public health emergency, delivering assistance to workers and families, and supporting small businesses. So those first two bullets on item number two, I'd like to see you bring some data back, and I'm for the sanitary sewer and the storm sewer and the water in forgiving those bills to our citizens or helping them, you know, get back on track so they can start next year on an even keel, not get turned off and whatnot. That would be what I'm.
Councilor, are you looking at page six of the presentation on the previous uses?
I'm sorry. I was looking at packet page number seven, the one that's up on this, or actually it's four on the eligible four. Use of funding.
Okay, eligible use. Thank you, sir.
Oh, it's numbered different. Sorry, I was looking at my printed copy.
We just want to make sure we're tracking with you.
Yeah, no, that's the one. So number two, the first two bullets is what I would like to see some data back in. And sanitary sewer, storm sewer and the water bills.
And Mayor and Council, again, and forgive me for pushing a little bit, but I just want to make sure that we're clear with all of you then, with what we bring back with kind of the first round of assistance on that, are we bringing to you, and I'm asking for your guidance on this, is are we bringing to you a targeted program that requires a showing of harm, or are we making the policy determination that everybody's been harmed?
I would say the latter. I would say that we give staff the ability to utilize those funds that everyone in Ridgefield has been harmed in some way.
I concur with the mayor on that. Yes.
I also concur with the mayor.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. That gives us some good guidance on that aspect of it.
Thank you.
So,
and yeah, and that's the, so I'm assuming the same goes for small businesses in Ridgefield?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And Councillor, on that, the last time we helped small businesses, Council had determined that it was really with a focus on businesses with 10 or less employees. What would you like to see for this round?
How many businesses, do we know about how many, like, are big businesses?
We'd have to get you that information.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the vast majority of our businesses are 25 or fewer. And
yeah.
The vast majority even beyond that are 10 or fewer. However, we'd have to get you the exact numbers on that.
So I agree with Councillor Akeley with the idea of providing utility assistance. And since we have the moratorium ending soon, I would like to see numbers on maybe how we can get ahead of that a little bit. So losing the money, you know, if we said we can only go back 2 billing periods and write it off, I don't think that's really in any of our interest to do that. So if we could have something kind of figured out before
we hit
the moratorium.
I mean, we have all the information already. It's just we need a policy decision, and then we can come back with a spending plan to get that done. But I've already been in conversation. I spoke with the district today, and we'll talk again tomorrow. What our hopes would be with them is they would identify the accounts, and then they would give us a list and a joint effort letter, whatever it may be, from the city and from the district to let those citizens know that we're helping them, and then we would pay direct to the district.
And to be clear, just as a reminder, the sewer district does not have the authority to shut off. You can't shut somebody's sewer off. So we have an agreement with them that council actually approved last year, maybe 2 years ago, I'm forgetting. But there was an agreement made with Clark Regional Wastewater District that we at the city, if there is an account that gets so far behind, like thousands of dollars behind, and we had a couple that get that far behind, that we would work with the sewer district to turn off their water. Because we can turn off their water in those circumstances, they still can't turn off the sewer. So, or they can't shut it off. So just for safety, you know, sanitation and safety reasons, obvious reasons. So so if we tie it again, if we tie this together with when the moratorium on utility shutoffs ends, then that would also apply and help with the sewer district accounts as well.
Right, and one extra thing with the sewer district is their main way of collecting is they have to place a lien on the house. So that adds more cost onto the homeowner, and so we want to avoid that, and that's what they're hoping to avoid as well. And then in conversations with them and then the staff member at CPU that will be managing the utility assistance once they get any type of guidance, is then we would forward anybody who has issues in the future, give them that information so that they could reach out to CPU to work with them to hopefully get additional assistance if needed.
So on the businesses, I think I'd like to see some information on all the businesses, not just 10 and under, but all of them.
Okay.
Would be my, and helping the CPU, sanitary sewer.
We can certainly get you information on that.
Yeah. Now, the other thing for policy decision is really, that's, when you're talking utility assistance, we're going to be looking at roughly $100,000 out of a little over $2.5 million. And then we'll determine at a later date the amount for business assistance, but that does leave a majority of the funding. So where would you like us to focus our time on Is it infrastructure? Is it some other type of assistance? Is it replacing the HVAC at the two locations now that we will need to do that? You know, where that's kind of the other guidance that we would like to see.
Yeah, we could put a pot of money toward city infrastructure or city facilities.
Okay.
To
I'm
help
looking
in
for
that.
Nods on that one, just of what to bring back to you. Because again, it'll all come back to you. So, all right,
right.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep. And again, also one other pot of money that I would like to see us utilize is for Ridgefield nonprofits. You know, we have Compassion 360, we have the Resource Center, we have others that are still struggling as a result of COVID.
It's a great point, and it's something that if you look at what we use CARES Act funding for, one of the last pieces of what we did was nonprofit assistance, and it was relatively limited in what we did, and we have received requests from a number of local nonprofits asking for assistance from the ARPA funding. So. It is something that if you are interested in kind of what help we might be able to provide some for some of the nonprofits, for example, the Family Resource Center, some assistance was provided for that, Neighbors Helping Neighbors, those types of organizations locally. We've had several requests already, so we can certainly bring those back to you if you're interested. We can bring those back to you as well. Again, not a huge amount when you're looking at the grand scheme of, you know, $2.7 million. But significant to them for sure.
The one question I have is infrastructure. Was that one that was decided on here also?
It wasn't. That's one of the questions we have is whether we, you know, is whether we should be strategically thinking about infrastructure investments that may not be this year. Maybe looking at partnering this year's money with next year's money for it, but is it something that you'd be interested in us looking at?
So one of the things regarding infrastructure is I'm hesitant to spend the first round of money all in one fell swoop. I would like to hold on to some of it and use that to look ahead for maybe a larger infrastructure project, or perhaps, as Councillor Onzo was saying, we don't know what's going to happen. How can we anticipate? It might be a good idea to hold on to some of these funds too.
I'm seeing some nodding. Got that? All right. Got it. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about is how far will the money go? You know, like if we did this, this, and this, okay, we're going to have so much left, and there's still some room to do some more. So
the big piece, inevitably, once you start talking infrastructure projects, that can eat up the vast majority of it, right?
Right.
I mean, you start talking a major water, sewer, storm project, it can eat up a couple million in a heartbeat. Yeah. So it really does become a matter of figuring out your priorities and saying, okay, well, we want to do some assistance for small or businesses. We want to do business assistance and individual homeowner assistance. So we want to do those things and then do a little bit of other stuff. And then what do you got? What do you have available still? And what do you want to set aside? And what do you want to actually put toward infrastructure? And how do we make a strategic investment? That's something that we as staff can work on and bring it back to you.
I'm the infrastructure, I would hate to see us hold off on doing the HVAC if you're including that in infrastructure and have the winter hit us and not have.
Brian saw your head's nodding, he already spent it. Like he already texted somebody and it's already on the way. So we will bring those investments back on a shorter term just because of the timing associated with it. Yeah. Is that we have literally an HVAC system at the new Public Works Ops that's like shaking on top of the roof. And then we got the heater busted. Like, so. There are a couple of things that from a timeliness standpoint, from an infrastructure timeliness standpoint, that we would likely bring back if you're okay with it. And then from a timeliness standpoint, like we said, the utility assistance, because of when the moratorium ends in September, at the end of September, as well as the needs of local businesses that have been struggling, you know, through this pandemic, and to their credit, have survived and thrived. And you know, we haven't lost any businesses due to the pandemic, which is pretty amazing, frankly. So those kinds of things we may want to bring back to you on a shorter term. The bigger, I think we're talking about the bigger chunk of infrastructure, like what would we do that would be strategic, that we'd hold off on a little bit and bring it back. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, sorry for stepping in.
No problem. And for those decisions, so we'll come back with the items that Mr. Stewart mentioned. For the larger part and holding off on some of the expenses, kind of looking forward when the second amount of money comes in, We can do two things. We can do it during the budget process for next year, or we can wait until the first amendment next year. And then that gives a lot of time to talk, see what happens with the variants and things like that, and then also a lot of time to kind of look at what is going to benefit Ridgefield if we were talking infrastructure and give us a strategic advantage into the future. So thank you. Right. I appreciate
any other questions,
guidance.
That, council, any other questions that you have before we end the work, the study session?
You have a fishbowl and you just reach in and...
We'll just put some in there. Yeah, exactly.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
it.
Good job.
Are we good for 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Yep. 5 minutes.